The season finale of Marvel's Daredevil is over, but we are just getting started talking about it here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the final episode of the Daily Daredevil podcast, at least the final episode for now. I'm Josh Wiggler, and I am joined here by my partner at Mahadeo and Wiggler, Avocados at Podcasting. It's Kevin Mahadeo. Kevin, how are ya?
I think Wiggler Mahadeo. It sounds better.
Yeah, you're hearing spectacular, so I should listen to you. But oh man, it's all over. We have just watched the final episode of Netflix's Daredevil season one, titled Daredevil, appropriately enough. We are finished with our crazy watch. We did not binge. This was impressive. I'm mostly impressed with you, Kevin. I have some self-control. You have none, usually.
I am very impressed with myself, and I wish I could say this is something that will last for a while, and I have learned how to pace a show, but that is false. Like, Fuller House is going to come on, and I'll be done in a day.
Fuller House. Yeah, how difficult was this for you to not just, like, sit down and watch the entire show?
Very difficult. Even though, like, at the very beginning, I was, like, in the middle of a move, like, I just wanted to afterwards just sit down and go through the whole thing. But I did it. I did the proper pacing so we could get through this appropriately. And it was a great experience. I think what you said before, I think you mentioned, like, you know, being able to take each episode in at a time and, like, really appreciate it before moving on to the next is very true. Like, I think I definitely, you know, enjoyed it a lot more than if I just binged through it. I would have missed, I feel like, a lot.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you're not a binging Billy. I'm glad that you were not a part of the Binging Billy Club. I'm glad that we got to experience the Billy Club at the same time together. I've had a great time doing these daily podcasts with you, Kevin, and I hope you guys have enjoyed as well. The feedback we've been getting throughout this whole thing has been great. But before we start eulogizing, let's talk about the final episode before we start thinking about this final podcast. There's a lot to cover here. First appearance of the proper Daredevil costume, the rest of Wilson Fisk, the resurgence of Nelson and Murdoch, so lots and lots and lots and lots of stuff going on. Overall, what did you think of the season finale, Kevin?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed a lot about it. I think it wrapped up stuff pretty well by leaving some things open. I was surprised that there was not as much action as I thought there'd be until the very end. But I guess they wanted to save it. The one thing I will say, and I think it might be the one really negative thing I have about the show, not loving the costume.
Uh-oh. Oh, man, it would have been great if we could have, like, one person who was super positive on the costume.
Apparently you feel the same way, huh?
We'll get into it. I think the Daredevil's costume is a really tricky one to pull off. And I think that there are reasons why I'm not wild about Daredevil's final costume here outside of the costume itself. I think that there's a lot that goes into the reason why I'm not blown away by it. And I think that it'll come up naturally as we talk about it. But I will just spoil now that I'm not the world's biggest fan of this costume either. I thought that I would really like it because I had seen that. I did see that promo that leaked out, and then Marvel and Netflix officially released the day before Daredevil started, which you had managed to avoid, Kevin.
I avoided this entire time. This was my first time seeing it.
Yeah, there's this great image of Matt going from, like, you know, regular Matt Murdock mode into the Dread Pirate Roberts Daredevil costume and then into, like, the red face mask. So I'd seen that and I thought that that looked really cool, but it looked a lot cooler as a static image than it did in motion, I thought. And again, we'll get into it. Not to be too negative right off the bat, I think that there's a lot of other really great stuff that happened in this episode that we can parse out, but just first and foremost, not the world's biggest fan of that costume, I will say.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be completely perfect, right? Everything has to have something wrong with it, or else we'd just be like, this is the greatest thing ever, and everything is perfection.
Yeah. All right, so let's just get into this episode, because there is so much to talk about. And just to begin with, in case, like, anybody was wondering if Ben Urich was somehow going to, like, get off the floor and be like, I'm all right, I was just choking, but I gave myself the Heimlich maneuver, and I'm good. No, he's dead. We start with his funeral. They really don't let you, like, take any time to hope that he might have somehow made it out of there.
No, they pretty much just confirm it right away with a very, you know, just only music and just a sad scene as they're, you know, carrying his coffin and laying him to rest. It's very upsetting. But it definitely confirms, like, yeah, no, he dead, man. He dead. No, and it's just like, ugh, it's just brutal reminder of how sad, you know, the last ending of the previous episode was.
Yeah. Yeah. And Karen's going to have like a heartbreaking conversation with Ben's wife. And apparently she knows who Karen is, even though her memory has been proven to be faulty. Like, she's very clear in this moment where she says, we didn't have kids. We were too busy with this or that. I think he would have wanted one like you. He said you were something else, the way you never let go of the truth. And Karen, like, even Karen, like, kind of says what you had been saying in our most recent podcast. I'm like, oh, this is my fault. What happened to Ben? I pushed him to doing this. And she says, Ben Urich never got pushed into doing anything he didn't want to do. He was a reporter. It's what he lived for. He passed doing what he loved. And it's just, it's brutal. Very brutal stuff here.
It is brutal, but like, and I will say though, what his wife said makes sense and does make me feel, you know, take a little bit off Karen, where it's just like, that's true. Ben would do things if he wanted to do them or not, if he didn't. Like, you can't convince him to do anything. Like, he had his mind set on it and that's what he was going to do. So whether or not, you know, she could have tried to convince him, but it was his choice to want to do this in the end.
Yeah, it was. And like, one of the things that we didn't even talk about in the Ben Urich death episode, because there was a lot of other stuff going on, but we may as well talk about it now. I have been wondering, like, it's such a hardcore death and such like a deeply depressing death of Ben Urich for so many reasons, but maybe the biggest one being like, his wife was in such a bad way. She, you know, he couldn't pay to put her in good care, all of these things. Like, their situation was really kind of dire. But it turns out that Ben dying is, I don't want to call it the best thing that could have happened for his wife, because it's not, but it ends up yielding, you know, some positive outcome. I don't even know if that's a delicate way of putting it, but she's going to be okay. He took out a life insurance policy that basically means that she's going to be taken care of. So she says, he always took care of me and he still is. So that's like the only silver lining in this whole thing, is that, you know, I thought that Ben was going to be dead and like, we were just going to have to deal with the fact that like, his wife was just going to be another casualty of Kingpin's destruction of Hell's Kitchen. But instead, Ben provided. He did well. He did good there.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of talked about it briefly during our when we were doing our death poll. We, you know, I kind of mentioned like, well, if Ben died, maybe he has a good life insurance policy, because I feel like he would. He's a responsible man. And clearly that's been the case. And I like that he's had it for a while. It's not just something like, oh, yeah, he took it out as soon as he started this story. It's like, no, he took it out a long time ago when they first met and the story was going bad. But that, even that scene was like heartbreaking, because she breaks down when she's saying that. And it's like, oh, it just really, again, hits you how tough it is and how sad it is that he died. But on the other hand, it makes you again be like, they need to take Kingpin down.
Yeah, gotta take him down. We have a good conversation, final conversation, I believe, in this episode between Matt and the priest. And the priest asks Matt how he's holding up, and Matt says he's holding up like a good Catholic boy. And the priest says, "Oof, that bad."
Just completely guilt-ridden, right? Like, I think that's the joke on that one.
Yeah. And Murdoch has taken this on himself. He's saying that that Urich was a good man and he's gone because I haven't been able to stop what's happening to this city. And the priest is trying to tell him, like, this is not on you. You've done everything you can and probably a lot that you shouldn't have in the name of this city. And yet, says Matt, here we are.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, Matt, again, is struggling with these decisions he has to make about what type of person he wants to be. And like, he's always felt a lot of guilt for the things that have been happening. And, you know, I think Foggy even makes a joke about like, you know, the Catholic thing later on about like, you know, it won't sit well with him if, you know, the Catholic side of him won't sit well if he kills someone. And I think that's important. And we're still seeing the effect here, and we're still have to decide like whether or not he's going to end up killing Fisk. And at this point, I mean, does he have to? Fisk has killed a lot of people already. Like, I mean, I suppose there's Foggy and Karen left. But like, yeah, it's tough. And, you know, he's just holding up like a good Catholic boy.
Yeah. And where's Foggy in all of this? Foggy is not even at the funeral. And this is making Karen very upset.
Understandably, I also was wondering, you know, where he could be, but I figured, because we know things like Karen doesn't, that he might be investigating some stuff, which we do find out to be the case.
Yeah, that Foggy, at least he has a good excuse.
Yeah, I mean, as good of an excuse as you can have in a circumstance, trying to bring down the man responsible for it, which is a pretty valid excuse.
Yeah, for sure. But Karen, you know, she's upset about everything that happened to Ben, but she is also kind of freaking out about what happened with Wesley, because what happens, you know, if somebody finds out about that? What happens if Fisk finds out that I was visiting his mother? What if he finds out that I was there with Ben? So, like, she has a lot of things that she is freaking out about as well. And Murdoch is telling her that he's still going to protect her. That deal that they made, you know, when he said in the first episode, I'm protecting you, I got you, that still applies.
Yeah, and, you know, we're seeing more scenes of them bonding, and I really do now, I mean, again, I'm coming around to the cat situation here between them, you know, that they're sharing a bond, and, like, he wants to protect her. He feels like he's failed at protecting so many other people too, and thus far he's done a good job of protecting Garen, more or less. So I feel like he's really trying to latch on to that and be like, I'm going to protect her. I'm going to protect the people I have left.
Yeah. So Murdoch is swearing that Fisk and everybody associated with Fisk, they are all going to get theirs. I don't think that he could have predicted that one of Fisk's associates is going to get theirs from Fisk.
Yeah, but, like, I gotta say, you know, we see this meeting now between Leland and Fisk, you know, and Leland his usual self, and he has these backup plans. As he said, he has a contingency. But, like, who would have thought that Leland would have been the last man standing, more or less, amongst the crew?
Yeah, well, I mean, Gao is still out there. Gao got away the best, obviously, of everybody.
Right, but we found out Gao was just a little more to her than we originally thought. She's still off the board, so sure. To speak.
Yeah, I mean, like, of all of the associates to die, the Russians, Nobu, Wesley, Leland, I did not expect Leland to be the last one of those. I felt like Leland, I don't know, I guess part of me thought maybe Leland could survive forever because he's such a cockroach. But, like, if you gave me those people, like, if you gave me the two Russian brothers, if you gave me Nobu, you gave me Wesley, and you gave me Leland, and you said, one of these five is going to make it out if you're alive, I would have said for sure, not Leland.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you thought we felt he was going to crumble when, you know, Matt confronted him as Daredevil, but he proved us wrong. He used his stun gun, which, hey, he still has, and he used in this.
He still has, and apparently stun guns are Matt Murdock's kryptonite, but they just, like, charge Fisk even further.
Right. Yeah, it was like it just gave him more power. It just fed him energy practically.
Yeah. So let's talk this through. So before we get to this meeting, this final meeting between Fisk and Leland, Fisk is going to be in his penthouse. Vanessa is doing well enough to be out of bed. She comes over. She's trying to talk to Wilson. And he's basically looking over this paperwork. He said, well, I made these arrangements. I had Wesley make these arrangements for you to get out of the country. But now that you're not leaving, I'm reviewing these funds, and I'm going to move them back, and there's just something funky about the numbers. And he brings this up with Leland after Leland is kind of telling Fisk that Gao is in the wind and blah, 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 and the heroin trade is gone. They've got some hiccups coming up. And Fisk, you know, brings this up. He's like, hey, so there's some, let's call them irregularities with the accounts. And Leland says, oh, of course they are. I move money all the time. It's a shell game to keep people off our backs. And he's shaking. His hands are just shaking. He's sweating. I'm nervous, so I'm sweating. He is profusely sweating. And he finally just cops to it. He's like, all right, well, you're going to figure this out sooner or later. What do you think of, like, Leland's audacity here to just come out and say exactly what's going on?
I mean, I think it's almost totally in line with the character at this point. Like, he sort of says what's on his mind when he feels that he can say it. And it feels like at this point, he's just like, well, screw it. It's come to this point. I've done what I need to do. I think I'm going to be safe because I have this contingency plan. A pretty good plan, I would say, that another rational human may have accepted. Unfortunately, Leland should have realized he's not dealing with a rational human anymore.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's totally in character, especially in the glib, almost like matter-of-fact way he delivers it. It's very much Leland.
Yeah. How about this to just drop in the middle of us recording the finale podcast? As we'd mentioned in the most recent podcast that we did, we were recording both of these back-to-back on Tuesday night. It is 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday, April 21st. Kevin, guess what I just got in the mail?
Is it a Daredevil costume?
I got a press release from Netflix saying that Marvel's Daredevil will be back for a second season.
Oh, is it this will tie into something I have noted. Is it in a year?
It will be in 2016.
Yeah, because when they had this line and they said,
this is old news to everybody who is listening to this. This is, who knows, maybe we even have more details by the time you're listening to this, because we are recording this on a Tuesday night and you're listening at the earliest on a Thursday. But this is brand news, breaking news to me right now. This literally just happened in my inbox.
I mean, it could be breaking news to you, but if you look back on older podcasts, Kevin called this.
Now I know you called this, you jerk.
No, but like when they say later on, they mention, you know, I'm assuming everyone has watched at this point, when they said like fiscal and going to trial could take a year, I'm like, just enough time until another season starts.
Just enough time. But yeah, so Netflix is confirming second season of Daredevil will premiere in 2016. Doug Petrie and Marco Ramirez, who worked closely with Stephen DeKnight and Drew Goddard, will serve as showrunners for season two. So yeah, it's happening.
Yeah, so a different creative team in a way.
Different creative team, but they worked with the team on this first season, so I'm sure that it's fine. But yeah, I did not expect that they would be able to get another season of Daredevil out as quickly as they're apparently going to do it. But that's exciting. I'm very excited about that.
Oh, for sure. I'm very excited for more. I mean, I love the character and I love what they've done here, and they've set up some great stuff for a second season. So I'm really, really pumped for it.
All right. Well, let's get pumped up. We'll put that on ice. We'll talk about that later on for sure. But just as that was just like a breaking news. Let's cut in and take the news as it comes in. Let's break Leland. Let's throw Leland down a shaft and murder him.
Yeah, he's super dead.
So he has this plan. He's like, I've got Hoffman locked up, and if anything happens to me, if I don't check in every 24 hours, he's gonna squeal like a piggy and, you know, say everything about what happened here, and I'll be fine. Like, I can whisk off into the night with my son, and we're just like another write off. I've been doing this my whole life, and you know, I'm gonna take half your money, and that's me being generous. So what do you think of my plan? It's a pretty good plan. Right? And Fisk is like, no, this is a terrible plan. You hurt, you know, Vanessa. You were trying to kill Vanessa, and now I'm going to throw you down an elevator shaft.
Yeah, like, it shows, you know, where Fisk is. And, you know, for all that's happening here, you know, Leland and Gao aren't wrong when they're talking about how Fisk has become more kind of erratic in a way ever since Vanessa entered the picture, because a lot of the bad decisions he's made, and by bad decisions I just mean sure murdering people, are associated with the Vanessa situation. Like, the fact that Leland hurt Vanessa is the reason he went nuts and attacked her. And I mean, maybe he thought, we'll find Hoffman is totally fine, which I guess would have worked out if there wasn't a vigilante actively trying to stop you. Again, Fisk's decision, he's Matt said it, he's an animal in the corner now, and I think he's reacting that way.
Yeah, he's reacting that way. He does not even care about Leland's threat. He basically reasons like, all right, I'll kill Leland, and then I've got 24 hours to find Hoffman. How hard can that really be?
I mean, it's in a city like Manhattan, super easy, right?
Well, if you're Wilson Fisk and you've got all of these people on payroll, I feel like if you know what your mission has to be, like if you know, like, I have 24 hours to find this specific guy, it's not out of the realm of the possibility.
That's true. And I don't think it's all of Manhattan anyway. They pretty much work exclusively in Hell's Kitchen, so it kind of narrows it down pretty decently.
Yeah, so they're going to try and find Hoffman. In the meantime, Foggy is going to find Matt, and we are going to reunite the Dream Team.
Yeah, they're coming back together. I love this conversation between them. I mean, I love everything dealing with Matt and Foggy. They work great off of each other, and, you know, I love their chemistry. And I like what Matt says, you know, when Foggy comes to him and is just like, I don't think we can go back to the way things used to be. And Matt's just like, we can't, but we can move forward.
Yeah, we can move forward. There's no way of going back, but moving forward might be the way to go. And that's what they're going to do here. And like, even in this episode, though they are working together side by side, even though like they, you know, I don't know if I would say Foggy has outright forgiven Matt. They certainly are on much better terms. But Foggy is going to be really reluctant to let Matt do all the things that he does. And Matt is finally going to, like, at least be able to kind of delicately say to Foggy why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, and like that's a little bit. I think that's a little bit later. Like he mentions, you know, like this is where the law meets right. reality. They want to do it the right way, and I do like that. I do like that Foggy's telling him you can't go out there and do these type of things and do this. We have to attack him with the law. That's the way. That's the right way to do this. It's the way we used to believe. Yes. And I like that a lot of this episode really does concentrate on them doing exactly that. That it's not just I'm gonna dress in my costume and go beat down someone. They're attacking him on a completely different front, and that's also pretty different from a lot of things we've seen with the superhero stuff. It's usually always just like time to put on a costume and go kick butt, but yes. like this was another layer to it. There was a reason why he had to do that at the end. The majority of it was them taking them the bad guy on a different front.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting way of putting it, that really they almost do take Kingpin down by the book.
Yeah, and it's great because you don't see that superheroes do that. It really is showing them to be more than just, you know, a vigilante. Like, you know, he does the vigilante stuff because he has to sometimes. But at the end of the day, he tries to fight on the side of the law, not against it.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting stuff that's the direction that this episode is going to go in. But we're going to get a little bit of that. We're going to get them pounding the pavement as they are talking to Officer Brett. They're trying to figure out everything that's going on. And Brett is going to figure out that, like, basically everybody he works with is corrupt in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, I mean, they bring him some they bring his mom some cigars again, but the good kind this time.
Yeah, the good kind. These are the good cigars.
I just love that bit that keeps coming back. And I love that he's just like, wait, have you just been buying her the bad ones before?
Yeah, he's just getting her the crappy cigars.
Yeah, and I do. Like, we're seeing more of this relationship build up with Brett and Matt as well, which, as we talked about, you know, I don't mind him being like the new confidant as far as the Daredevil persona goes, and in a way, the Matt persona. He'll be talking to him on boat friends, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he can be his lawyer friend. He can be his vigilante friend, as long as they're friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're gonna be friends. But like, Matt is gonna be distracted during the conversation because he is going to overhear some cops talking about how Hoffman is still alive and he knows too much and they need to go find him and they need to kill him. So Murdoch immediately knows that Hoffman is alive. He's holed up somewhere. We got to find him before other people find him first.
Yeah, which is interesting. Like, you know, they talked about before how Armin Tully was someone and Hoffman was someone they could have tried to get a hold of. The two guys that attacked, you know, Mrs. Cardenas, they could have tried to get a hold of as to use against Fisk. But, you know, most of them were gone or missing at the time. And now we find out there's a reason Hoffman's been gone. It's because Leland also knew that sometimes he might have to use someone against Fisk. And he was just like, I'm going to snatch up Hoffman and keep him for insurance. So we see how this is coming into play, and basically the tactic that they thought would be impossible has just become possible.
Yeah, you know, just thinking about it now, I don't feel like we did a good enough job talking about the death of Leland Owlsley. Do you have a eulogy for that character? I love the actor Bob Gunton, who's just terrific in everything. Obviously iconic in The Shawshank Redemption. He's just been in a bunch of fantastic stuff. What did you think of him here as Leland? Do you think that the show is worse for not having him in the universe anymore?
I do think that the show is me missing something with Leland gone. He was just such a great character, and the way he delivered stuff and his comedic timing at times, like just his frankness and his personality worked in contrast and yet so well with that villainous crew. You know, he's always talked about his son in this show, and it's weird because Leland Owlsley is a character from the comics. He's known as the Owl, who's sort of like a crime lord, basically. And with him dead, I wonder, he mentioned his son before and his son's name is Lee. I wonder if they're going to have it that his son comes in and maybe takes over that spot as like a crime lord in Hell's Kitchen, trying to take over what his dad was trying to do. Because technically, if things went the way they did and he had these funds set aside in the way he did, his son probably has a lot of money coming to him.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Maybe the Owlsley family line is not done. Maybe we haven't seen the last of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, that all said, you know, the actor kind of brought so much to that role in his fantastic delivery. So that would definitely be lacking, I do feel like.
Yeah, for sure. So Nelson and Murdoch, we are going to see, you know, one of those late night scenes of the two lawyers plus Karen. They're, you know, burning the midnight oil. It's the first time we've seen the three of them working as a unit in a very long time. you know, it's classic Foggy once again lamenting, I could have had a deli, you know, I could have had an apron with my name on it. It's so stupid. And like, you know, they're sifting through thousands and thousands of pages. And this is just like very, very, very difficult work. But they're going to figure out, you know, a building that's been like marked off that is probably where Leland is keeping Hoffman. So Matt is going to be able to go and do something about this. And he's basically, he steps away from the table and says, I got to go tell the cops. I'll be right back.
Why don't you just call them?
it'd be better if I did it in person. I got to go. And Foggy like tries to step in. He's like, dude, please do not do this. Don't do that. Don't do the man in the mask thing. And this is where Murdoch says what you had said earlier, Kevin, where he says, I know how you feel about what I do, but this is the part where law meets reality. Either I put on the mask or we risk losing Hoffman and Fisk wins. And yeah, you know, that's the intersection that we're at. You know, this is desperate times call for desperate measures, and desperate measures happens to be the nickname for the Dread Pirate Daredevil.
Again, we talked about it a little bit earlier. I agree with Matt. Like, I like the fact that they're trying to do the right thing by attacking the side of law. We see them working together, like you said, in this like dynamic we haven't seen in so long. But they do really well together. You know, they work really well together. I do also like one, like you mentioned the butcher thing. I love that had kept coming back. When he first said it, I remember you saying like, oh man, I hope this keeps coming back later on in the series. And it does. It's came back like at least three more times since. Also, I forgot about this the last time this happened, and this scene had it again. Do you know what that device is Matt is using in this scene?
No idea.
I was wondering that. If any listeners know what that is, please let me know. I'm very curious because it's like this weird thing that I don't know, because he has like an earpiece on.
I think it's how he uses, you know, the computer. You know, the keyboard is Braille, and I think that, you know, he hears responses, like he listens. I don't know how it works, but I think that that's basically what it is.
It was very interesting, like just because of, yeah, like you said, the Braille like keeps changing, like almost like a like some kind of computer system, like it just pops up and changes as he goes on. So I was very curious about what that was and what the technology is for that.
This is so fun to be podcasting about the finale live right now, even though people can't hear us and won't hear us for a couple of days after this is happening. But Zach Brooks has tweeted at us. He has sent us the link to the Daredevil renewal news. Drew M9 87 sent it my way as well, so I'm getting hit up by a bunch of people. This is really very fun to be talking about Daredevil as this is happening. I see somebody, a guy who used to, I don't know if he still works at Marvel, Matt Faustini, who is somebody I follow on Twitter, who has tweeted out hashtag Daredevil season 2, a picture of Matt Murdock from the comics at a Christmas party wearing an I'm Not Daredevil sweatshirt. So just lots of really fun stuff going on as we're celebrating the final season of Daredevil here with this final conversation, or first season, I should say, rather. This is just exciting stuff. I'm having a good time.
Yeah, it's like, it's great to exist and record while breaking news is happening at the same time.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I'm having a blast. All right. Well, speaking of having a blast, let's go to the safe house and let's have some sandwiches. And by sandwiches, I mean death.
I definitely thought like that guy coming in was just like, oh yeah, meatball marinara sandwiches or whatever, chicken parm. I'm like, oh crap, is he going to show up and kill them the same way that what happened with Hoffman and Blake?
How great would that have been if that was how Hoffman went? Like Hoffman dies by meatball sandwich.
It's like, oh, the irony.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
No, but I'm glad he didn't die because clearly he is the one last hope that they have.
Yeah.
So like we get this really, you know, brutal scene too. Like these guys are just there guarding Hoffman, who's playing cards by himself, which is just sad. There's other people there. Is he that like that unpersonable that no one wants to play cards with him?
No one wants to play cards. And they just want him to play solitaire and feel super alone.
Yeah. And but yeah, then the cops burst in and just start killing everyone.
Headshot, 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 over and over and over again. Just cops getting murked by other cops. It's very intense.
Yeah, and I did like I'm curious about your take on this, because after, you know, those cops take down the others, you know, they go up to Hoffman, they're ready to shoot him. One of them points his gun, and then we just see from Hoffman's perspective, and he closes his eyes, and then we just hear the sounds of these cops getting their butts kicked.
Yeah.
And then the final image, Hoffman opens his eyes again, and it's, you know, Daredevil doing a backflip kick, which is just awesome looking, to take out that last cop.
No, that was a great scene. You know, again, we've seen Matt Murdock kick so much ass on this show. We've seen him do incredible things. We've seen him get his ass kicked. Like, we've seen really great action scenes on this show, and this episode is going to culminate in a very big action scene as well. So I feel like to withhold that from us, we know what's going on. We don't need to see it. We can listen to it. We can stare at Hoffman's face and just hear the sounds of backflips and punches being thrown and guns going off and not hitting the right person. And we know exactly what's happening. And it's almost better just to imagine how everything's going, especially when you do see that final backflip and you're like, yeah, it's probably been that for the past 30 seconds.
Yeah, and I think another, you know, what you were saying, because of the big action scene near the end, is maybe why they decided to make that choice. They were like, oh man, like, let's reserve the action too for this final fight that's going to happen.
Yeah. So the man in the mask, he's going to give Hoffman an opportunity to either turn in evidence on Fisk and set things right, or he can continue playing cards until Fisk sends some more men to kill him. So pretty easy choice for Hoffman here.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a very difficult choice. I don't know why he didn't just say, no, that's okay, I'll just play it alone and then die.
He's like, can I eat the meatball sandwich first? Please. Go.
I just, I did like when he just goes up there, and I don't know what it was, but just the way he slowly pulls that chair out and then sits down, what I thought was really fantastic, like a weird inverse of the, you know, cop interrogation scene almost.
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, so Matt, before he leaves, he tells him to turn himself into Brett Mahoney. He's like, the one cop I can promise you is not corrupt, and he knows some lawyers who won't be bought. Referring to himself, of course. But Hoffman is going to do exactly that. He's going to turn himself in to Brett. We are going to find out that he just wants to be placed in protective custody. He's going to waive rights to immunity.
Yeah, which is interesting, but I wonder.
It's not a great deal for this guy, but I guess it's a better deal than being killed.
Yeah, and I obviously feel like a lot of that is partially, you know, Matt and Daredevil influence. Like, no, you're not going to fully get away with this. You know, it just, he's going to be kept safe, but he's not going to get some kind of special deal out of it.
Yeah. And now, just thinking about it, with the news that Daredevil is officially getting a season 2 fresh in the mind, knowing that Wilson Fisk is going to end this season behind bars and Hoffman is going to be behind bars, what are the odds that these two meet next season?
I think pretty high. I think the white clothes that Kingpin is in is not going to stay so clean by next season.
Yeah, it's going to get some meatball sub on it.
Yes, some meatball sub for sure. There's definitely going to be some red things and some kind of meaty things all over that outfit.
Yeah, for sure. But Hoffman, he's going to give up everybody. He's going to give all the names. He's going to sell out Wilson Fisk. He's going to say everything. And we are treated to just this truly spectacular sequence of the FBI just busting tons of people. We see like Turk running in slow motion,
which I loved the Turk one, just him running in slow motion from the cops and then getting tackled after sliding across the hood.
It's so good. We see some cops getting arrested. We see we go to the bulletin and you think that maybe Ellison's about to get arrested, but no, it's somebody else. It's another person at the bulletin.
Which makes me really happy. I'm glad that it wasn't Ellison, because, you know, everything we saw of Ellison for so long was him really trying to help Ben, like, you know, trying to tell him to take the editor job, just clearly having sympathy for the wife. It would have made sense if he was on the pay, but I'm glad it wasn't him. I'm glad it was someone else on the take on this, and that Ellison was actually, you know, his conscience was clear. And I feel like Ellison as a character is someone we might see again and might change his tune on certain things if he saw that one of his people was actually bought by Fisk.
Yeah, for sure. So that's really great. I really like that. We see Landman from Landman and Zach get arrested, and Marcy is not going to get arrested, so she made the right call.
Still no Zach, though.
No Zach. Who is Zach?
I mean, we think it's Morris, but, you know, we have to wait and see. How amazing would that be, by the way, if we did see Zach in season two and it's oh, my God, I can't
Mark Paul Gosselaar.
Mark Paul Gosselaar, you know, Franklin and or Bash, whichever one of the two of them he is.
Yeah, that'd be great. I would approve of that. We also see Senator Cherry get arrested as well. So everybody is getting arrested. And now, you know, based on just the Hoffman thing we mentioned earlier, I wonder how many of these people we'll see behind bars with Fisk next season.
If they are behind bars and it's like a Gen Pop situation, they are not going to be there for long.
You don't think
he's
so?
He's going to either kill them himself or have other people do it.
Yeah, you would think that like a guy like Senator Cherry is going to go to like one of those posh prisons as well.
Well, yeah, presuming most of them actually even end up in jail and stuff. I guess they'd be there regardless, and then after the trial, would they find out? Senator might be able to. Well, I don't know. I'm trying to think of the bail situations and all that, but yeah, let's just assume they're all behind bars.
Yeah. Let's do that. And then it looks like Fisk is going to get taken down. He knows what's going on. Vanessa's like, no, you can't. You can't. He's like, listen very carefully. I need you to do something for me. We see the FBI storming the building. And then we cut back to him. He says, do you understand everything I've told you? And just like me as a viewer, like, oh, come on. What did he say? I wanted to know.
Yeah, I definitely am curious about what he said.
You
I wonder
she like put she placed the order basically to like get all of these like TAC teams to like come in and bust him out from behind the back of the truck.
I think like that was one of my thoughts that maybe she helped organize it. But we saw him on the phone beforehand too, saying like, you know, just get it done, or you know, like get it together. He was telling someone on the phone, so that may have been the preparations for it. For sure, I think she was involved and like was aware of what was going to be going down. And I think she probably did help, you know, maybe organize it together and make sure all the pieces were in place after he was taken.
Yeah, and then he proposes.
Yeah, he does, which, you know, yeah, makes sense, because, you know, he's pretty into this woman. And if you what is the line? If you want it, you better put a ring on it.
Beyonce said that, I believe.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, you know, it's a bizarrely, I don't want to say touching scene, but there is, it's an emotional scene, certainly for the Kingpin and Vanessa, which has to be watching this like. The levels of Joker and Harley Quinn here, as far as like insane love goes,
it's pretty crazy. It's really crazy that she's as into this guy as she is. Again, as I said last time, I'm very interested in this. As I said in yesterday's podcast, I'm very interested in just how into Wilson Vanessa is. What does this say about this lady?
Yeah, there's a story there, and I'm hoping now that we know there is a season two, we might get some of that story.
Yeah, I'm really excited for season two, Vanessa. I hope that she's up to some Kingpin hijinks outside of prison. I think could be very, very fun.
Yeah, I feel like she's going to be like a what's the word, consigliere on the outside, like trying to organize stuff as he dictates from the inside.
Yeah, she's the new Wesley.
Yeah, yeah, which would be pretty cool. Yeah. I would have liked Wesley, but he's dead now, so.
He is. It's very sad. He is dead. But yeah, and the FBI storms in, and Wilson Fisk is dragged out in bracelets in front of the media, in front of cameras. What about your better tomorrow? What about the Russians? Do you have any response to any of this? And he's just stone cold silent and tossed into the back of a truck. And Wilson Fisk, you've been taken down. You got caught.
Yeah, the Kingpin has been toppled. As far as the position he was in, he's definitely been toppled. But he is not quite out just yet, as we see.
Am I?
Yeah. Oh, no, here comes the Green Goblin. Finish it!
Finish it! Godspeed, Daredevil.
Don't tell Vanessa.
Yeah, exactly. Spider-Man spoilers.
Yeah, right. Anyway, between Gao Fury and now, what was this? The King Goblin? I'm not even too sure what's going on with us
King
anymore.
King Goblin, I think, is another thing entirely. But yeah, he's behind bars, or at least he's on his way to be behind bars. He's going to take a detour before he is fully behind bars. But at Nelson and Murdoch, everybody is celebrating. Everybody feels good. It's thanks to the three of them and Marcy. God bless her designer pumps.
Yes, I like the fact that Marcy, you know, I was a little worried when Foggy, you know, we kind of talked about it in the previous episode where Foggy came to her and, you know, trying to have her get her soul back. And there is a part of me that was just kind of like, but what if he's wrong? But I'm glad that's not the case. I'm glad, you know, we saw when Lamin got taken away, she was like thankful that she was safe and, you know, that she actually did help them out and wasn't just someone who was going to betray them.
Yeah. But yeah, they like toast to everybody who they've lost. They toast to Elena, they toast to Ben and everybody else that son of a bitch has hurt. He's not done hurting, Kevin.
No, he is not. I feel like he is the type, though, who will never stop hurting if he has the power to do so.
Yeah, well, he has the power to do so immediately. He is in the back of the van, but not for long. He starts to tell them a story. I have most of it written down. Wilson says, I was thinking about a story from the Bible. I'm not a religious man, but I've read bits and pieces over the year. Curiosity more than faith. But this one story. There was a man. He was traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was set upon by men of ill intent. They stripped the traveler of his clothes. They beat him, left him bleeding in the dirt. A priest happened by, saw the traveler, moved to the other side of the road and continued on. And then a Levite, a religious functionary, came to the place and saw the dying traveler, but he too moved to the other side of the road. He passed him by. Then came a man from Samaria, a Samaritan, a good man. He saw the traveler bleeding in the road and stopped to aid him without thinking of circumstances or difficulty. He applied oil and wine to his wounds, carried him to an inn, gave him all his money for the other to take care of the traveler. Then the Samaritan continued. He did this simply because the traveler was his neighbor. He loved his city and all the people in it. I always thought I was the Samaritan in the story. Funny, right? How even the best men can be perceived by their, deluded by their true nature. I'm not the Samaritan. I'm not the priest or the Levite. I am the ill intent who set upon the traveler on a road that he should not have been on. And then comes the gunman. And it's just, this is like the Oscar scene for Vincent D'Onofrio, I feel like. Like, this is the, or I guess the Emmy scene.
Emmy, yeah.
You know, this is like the thing that you play before he's like brought up on stage to accept his inevitable Emmy Award for Best Supporting Actor in a Drama. It's a fantastic monologue he gives right there.
It's phenomenal, and I love the story he tells, because it's a lot of times you talk about how the villain in stories, you know, want to see themselves as heroes, want to see themselves as a good guy, like what they're doing is right in their head. And for a long time we did see that with Wilson Fisk, that he thinks he's doing the right thing, he's trying to make the city a better place. And it's sort of a weird moment of him accepting the fact that, no, I am the villain in this story. You know, and when we see him ranting later, like you talk about this scene, I love the scene later when, you know, the fight's going down. He's just yelling and talking about how this city doesn't deserve the good stuff. I think that's also a very powerful scene and speaks a lot to like what he's become now.
Yeah, for sure. But he's gone full Kingpin. He's broken bad. You know, he finally accepts like that he is the ill intent. Like he sees himself through the eyes of a Matt Murdock. Like he sees what he actually looks like, and he is the Wrath. You know, he's not the Samaritan. He is Wrath, and he is going to bring that upon anybody in his path anymore. Like, no more kid gloves. He is just going to destroy. That's just the mode that he is going to operate in from now on. And it's good to see the Kingpin like this. Like, it's been very fun getting to know him on a human level all season long. And you know, kind of see him wrestle with this idea of, am I the monster that my father was? And us, you know, kind of objectively from seeing everything that he's done, pretty much being able to say, yeah, dude, you're pretty bad. but here he comes finally willing to embrace that truth. You know, he sees the rabbit in the snowstorm and the rabbit's got like killer fangs and is going to bite your head off. He is
the Monty Python rabbit.
Yeah, he is the Monty Python rabbit. He is the ill intent. And it's cool. It's a cool look for Kingpin for sure.
Yeah, and it's one that, you know, this entire, like, kind of like how this episode is called Daredevil, you might as well call it Kingpin as well, because we're seeing the birth of these people. We see the debut of Daredevil, and we're seeing the real emergence of a Kingpin. We're seeing the guy who sits there as, you know, the people outside just get shot and murdered and, you know, by these armed gunmen that come out and just get mowed down and then just calmly walk on out after it's done.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, it's good stuff. But back at Nelson and Murdoch, they are watching. They all feel really stupid for celebrating before, you know, counting their chickens before they hatch, so to speak. But Matt is going to take matters into his own hands. Foggy's going to say, don't do it. Don't do that. Don't go back out there in your black pajamas. Matt's not. He's got plans.
Yeah, which, you know, I think a lot of Foggy's, you know, one, trying to stop him is mainly to because of his concern. He saw, like he said, I saw you half dead though, last time, more than half dead. And one, so there's a concern for that. But two, the concern for, you know, Matt's soul, because it's just like, hey, if you go out there and you try and kill this guy, if you kill this guy, that's not the way it's supposed to be. You can't do that. You can't be that. And Matt, I think, in a way, is not only telling him like, hey, man, I got the pajama situation covered. I'm going to be protected, and also saying like, I know what I need to do.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's a double reassurance.
Yeah. Don't worry, I've got red pajamas that look even better.
Do they?
All right, well, we'll get there in a second. But yeah, so Fisk is broken out. There's this one FBI guard inside the back of the van who's like trying to, you know, like make his last stand, and he says, if anybody comes closer, I'll put a bullet in this fat son of a bitch. And then the other guard just like blaps him.
Yeah, I had a feeling that was coming. Like, the other guard that was like, nah, let him talk. I was like, you don't seem openly up. If you're letting him talk, something seems to be off here.
Yeah. Half the cops in this town are crooked. It's a pretty safe bet that this guy is on that list.
Yeah, one out of two cops are crooked. One of those two is definitely going
to
be it.
All right, so let's go to Melvin Potter, who has made most of the suit. It's not finished yet.
Yeah. Fun fact, though, right before Daredevil, he drops the case onto the countertop. He covers this what looks like specs for some kind of like bladed weapon.
OK.
I kind of mentioned how Melvin Potter was a villain previously.
Yes.
That is sort of one of the weapons he used as a villain. So it made me very curious when I saw that.
Interesting.
Yes.
So maybe we'll see a little more of that in season two.
Yeah, season two is coming, so I'm very curious about, you know, Daredevil has to keep his promise about keeping Betsy safe, so.
Yeah, that's right. He doubles down on that promise here. He says, I made you a promise, I intend to keep it, when Melvin asks about Betsy. So hopefully we'll see some follow-up on that next year. But even before all of that, you know, Potter is just saying, like, the black parts of the costume provide the most protection. The red will deflect a knife, depending on the angle, but maybe not. So it sounds like the costume is, like, good, not great.
So yeah, it almost like it's unfinished. Like maybe there's more to come still in this costume. Like this is a prototype for just the end of season one. And by the time a year later, if the case is in season two, we may actually see a different version of this costume.
Yeah, it's a work in progress, and that certainly bodes well for other things, because I think that we need this to be a work in progress.
Yeah. So yeah, let's do this. So he shows up.
Yeah. So he's costume. Yeah. He's gonna show up in costume. He's going to derail, or not derail, but he's gonna sabotage the getaway car that Fisk is inside of, and he is going to go to town on Fisk, and he is going to be wearing his classic Daredevil costume. He's wearing the reds. Kevin, take it away.
All right, so here's the thing. First off, I'll say this. When he was standing on top of the roof and he didn't have the mask on, I actually kind of liked it. I think my major problem is the mask. I think something's off about it. I think maybe it's how the black and the cheekbones look really weird. I think the forehead comes down too far and the horns are maybe a little too low. There's just something off about the head itself. And I'm not keen on the black and red combination, but I think if I had to pick one thing that I really throws it all off, it might be the helmet, in my opinion.
Yeah. So I don't really have much of a problem with the costume itself, with the design. I think, again, as I said, I think in a static image it looks pretty cool. I think that there was something about the way that this scene was constructed that bothered me, and I think that the suit's place in it was, you know, I feel like the suit got caught in the crossfire for me. I don't know about you, but the violence and the action on this show, as we even said on this podcast, but we've been saying all along, has been so extreme and like so unflinching in its impact. And like you really just see people getting taken down so hard and the exhausting amount of effort that goes into doing what Matt Murdock does. And even, you know, what his enemies are able to throw back his way and what he's able to take. There's just this bare knuckled, bruised knuckled, bloody knuckled element to the violence on this show that even a show like Arrow that I love has never really been able to pull off until now. Like now, this final scene that's supposed to be kind of the big climactic battle of season one of Daredevil feels like an episode of Arrow at best, and kind of felt a little Power Rangers-ish at worst.
Really?
Yeah, I kind of just like, I was sort of like waiting for him to like just go like, tia, 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 tia. Just like to do like some real like Green Ranger grunts and noises and bust out the Dragonzoid flute and, you know, summon some extra help and like have like the Go Green Ranger Go theme song in the background. I don't know. It's just like it was a combination of the music, the choreography. I know that they're trying to build up this really big heroic moment, but I feel like for some reason when he's in that costume, the punches and the kicks and everything that he is tossing out at any enemy in sight, like it doesn't land with that impact anymore. Like it's like he's pulling his punches is the way that it reads visually. So I think that it's in the way that it was shot. I think the music choice was a little goofy, and I do think that the costume itself, it's a little bit jarring to see after all this time seeing the man in the Dread Pirate Roberts uniform. And I think that maybe another function of that is that we turned the Daredevil costume into like such a, you know, such an artifact, like such a hidden away thing at such arm's length that we don't even get to see it until like the final 15 minutes of the final episode of the first season. And I don't know what they could have or should have done differently, if they could have or should have done something differently at all. But maybe they needed to bring this in earlier because it's so jarring after everything else that we've seen on Daredevil to see him in this costume. I don't know that it works. I don't know that it works because we're so used to a guy just wearing thin black fabric all season long. And, you know, we know that this takes place in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and everything where there's thunder gods and, you know, gamma radiated giants and things like that. But we haven't really been living in that world in the same way. You know, this has been a darker show, a more grounded show. And when you finally do go that superhero route where you have him in a superhero costume, I just feel like we needed more time to be prepared for it.
I definitely don't disagree. I guess that we needed more time. I see where you're coming from with the whole outfit thing. I actually liked the choreography in the fight itself. I liked him and Kingpin going at it. We can get a little bit more into that in a second. But as far as the actual, what you're saying about the costume and how jarring it is, I kind of agree with what you're saying. We're so used to seeing him in like that tight black shirt and those, like, it's like ninja gear, right? And you see most of his lowered face completely. It's just the top part of his face is covered. And I think it shows him enough that you look at him and you're just like, that's a person, that's a regular dude. And he's doing all this this hardcore stuff and he's taking these bruises and we see him a little more brutalized because of it. And so all of a sudden when he puts on this costume, the costume is thicker. You know, you don't see his frame as slight as it used to be. You don't see his face as much either because it's more encompassing than that mask was. And I think it does take away some of the almost human elements that we know he has because he's not your typical superhero. So I can see sort of that, what you're saying about, you know, how the costume offsets that, how it didn't feel as like brutal and real as the other fights. And just seeing a superhero costume automatically, I think, because of where we are and how many superhero movies we see, it's something in our brain that triggers like, oh man, this isn't grounded in realism anymore. It's a superhero film again. So I kind of see where you're coming from that. I like I said, I definitely think the costume needs work because there's just something off about it. Like I it's hard. Like for me, there's the helmet aspect, but yeah, I don't know. It's weird to say, and you know, but it's true. I actually think I like the movie costume better.
Whoa.
Because I feel like the movie costume, at least for the Daredevil, is pretty close to what it looks like in the comics. It's not fully what it looks like in the comics, but it was very close. And I think I may have liked the movie costume better than what the show ended up looking like.
Interesting. I don't agree with that. I still think that this is better than that. I don't love it. And I think it's such a tall order. It's a difficult costume to pull off, you know, all red spandex. And now you have to like translate that to live action, to a show where this is going to be the guy who's running around at night, busting up bad guys. It's a hard look to translate to the screen. I don't envy any costume designer that has to take on that job. I think it's a really tough job and a harder costume than many other superheroes to really pull off and make it look real good. I just don't think that they fully got it on this one. You know, I had some pretty harsh words to say about it a minute or two ago. And, you know, I think in a static image, it looks pretty good. I think obviously we need to get to this point if we want Daredevil to be Daredevil. But I really like that Melvin Potter says that I'm not quite finished with it yet because it means that there there is time to work on this. And I really do think that they, for season two, which we now know exists,
they need to work on it.
I think they need to take some time to just like look at it and say like, okay, we got certain things right. We've got certain concepts about it, certain ideas about it right. But they really only designed this for one episode anyway. And I'm sure that it was a lot of back and forth in terms of like, how are we going to make this look? How are we going to get this right? It's a really tricky thing to pull off. And I just don't think that they totally got it. And luckily it is only for one episode. And now we're entering a season two where he is going to have to wear some version of that all the way through. So I encourage the people who are making the show just to go at it again. Give it another try. You're close, getting there, but not quite. And I mean, I think about like Captain America's costume in the first Avengers movie, which I personally actually really liked. But I feel like Captain America is another one of those superhero costumes that's kind of difficult to pull off without making him look super cheesy. And I think that the Marvel movies have done a really good job in subsequent films featuring Captain America, you know, Winter Soldier and Age of Ultron coming up, making that costume look even better. So costumes have evolved in the Marvel movies. I hope that Daredevil's costume, as it has evolved from the black suit to something closer to the traditional red suit here in season one, I hope it takes another step in season two, because I don't love it as it is. And I think that there's a lot of room for improvement. And I think if this is what we are going to get in season two, you know, just this same exact thing, I'd be a little bit nervous just because I've loved this show and I've loved the violence on this show. I think it's been pretty stunning and pretty tough to watch at times, but also like the kind of thing where you can't really rip your gaze away. And I hope that that can hold with this costume, because based on this one fight scene, which you liked more than I do, and I'm very curious to hear what everybody else thinks. Let us know like where you landed on Matt's final fight with Wilson Fisk. I didn't love it. Kevin, you seem to like it more than I did. Let us know what you guys think. But if that's the kind of fight style that we can expect to see more of in season two, then I think that this show is losing a little bit of something that's made it so special all the way through this season. That's just my opinion.
Well, let's break some stuff down here a little bit on it. I think that again, I agree with you that the costume itself is problematic, needs a lot of work. So we both agree on the costume aspect. As for the fight itself, I get where you're coming from in that it for me, it's certainly not the best fight of the series, not by a long shot. But I did like the emotion of the fight, which I think is important. It's weird. It's a weird comparison, but like for me, you know, when I talk about Star Wars with people, like my favorite lightsaber battle in the Star Wars franchise is actually Return of the Jedi. Like, that's my favorite lightsaber battle, and it's the one between Vader and Luke. And the reason why I like that so much is because you see this like raw emotion. You see like these two people, you know, fighting each other, and it's not just, oh, look at the cool lightsaber fight. It's the just pure anger and feelings behind it. Like the scene when Luke runs out after Vader says, like, you know, oh, I sense another, a sister. Luke just comes out, starts wailing on him, and it's brutal and it's emotional and it's important. And you compare that, and sure, like, you know, anything from the new trilogy is flashier and, you know, has these flips and kicks and kind of stunning choreography at times, but it's emotionless to me. There's not like a lot going on there in, as far as the fight itself goes. So the reason why I like this fight is the same thing. Like, we're seeing these two go at it, and while it's not as like flashy and stunning as some of the other stuff we see, just the sheer brutality and emotion behind it, because it's one, Matt, you know, fighting with his self, you know, to whether or not he needs to kill this guy, and two, just a Kingpin losing it. Like the scene where Kingpin gets the upper hand, Matt is on his back, and the Kingpin starts hitting him with that pipe, and it's just kind of like, you know, the city deserves people like my father. This is what the city deserves. It doesn't deserve to be saved. It deserves to be destroyed. You know, it doesn't deserve anything good. Like, I feel it's very important, because we see also the Kingpin as a broken person now, as a person who has just given up on this city and just hates it to a certain extent after all he did. And for that reason, I really like that fight. I think the emotion was really cool. You know, and it's not as flashy too, because I think when you're fighting someone like the Kingpin, Matt's flips and kicks aren't going to be as effective, because he's such a big guy. Like, those kicks worked on, you know, smaller people or certain size people, but doing that against someone so rock solid, like, it's not going to be as effective, because we see the Kingpin taking these hits, taking these punches, and then just picking Matt up and tossing him into trash cans, into walls, and just pounding him in the face. We see him do like an E Honda move where he just runs and flies at him, you know, like a sumo almost.
If only he did the thousand arm slap.
Right? Like, they could have easily snuck that in. But yeah, it's just a different fight, I think, and a different style if you're taking on the Kingpin. That's slightly different. I will say, the thing that I did notice and did off, you know, put me off a little bit was when he was wailing with him on the pipe, because he was blocking, you know, with his hands. We kind of saw like these sparks almost because of the armor he's wearing now. It was like protecting him. So normally that would have just shattered his wrist, but you know, and forearms, but it was kind of keeping him safe. But that said, the sparks kind of, there was something about it though, I will admit, that kind of made it feel less real, because clearly, you know, they had to put the sparks in and all that stuff. So there was things that I think need a little work, but as far as like disliking the fight, I definitely didn't, because I think it was important emotionally for what was going on throughout the series.
Yeah. And I guess for me, I hear what you're saying, and I think like the sparks issue is, it's stuff like that I kind of was just reacting to in terms of what was on the screen. And part of me almost thinks like, I know that this show wanted to get Wilson Fisk behind bars by the end of the season. You know, clearly that's where we go, even though Daredevil intercedes. Part of me wonders if they should have just let that be straightforward, if they should have just let Matt take him down by the books, if that almost would have been a better way to go, a cleaner way to go. Maybe not as sexy as the late Ben Urich would say. You know, maybe it wouldn't be as exciting to just have Fisk taken down by the law, by the book. But I feel like maybe it would have been truer to what we had seen so far. Whereas I just think like this big action scene, which does have emotion behind it, but with like the swelling music and just the choreography of it, that really didn't do it for me, felt more cheesy than heavy to me. And I almost think like if the end result was to just throw Fisk behind bars, let's just do it that way. You know, let's just continue forward with the plan. Let's just have Fisk not have his big breakout moment. Let's just throw him behind bars. But, you know, listen, I have been very high on this show all season long, and I overall, I will still give Daredevil season one a huge, huge, huge two thumbs up. I would be not telling you the truth if I said that I thought that this final confrontation between Matt and Wilson worked for me. It didn't really.
Well, I mean, it's a fair point. Like you said, the show definitely gets two major thumbs up. I will disagree that I think that I prefer that they did a double, like they took him down by the book, but they also had to have Daredevil intercede. I think that it just, in the world that they live in, like that's the whole point, is that what Matt said to Foggy, you know, where law and reality meet, is that you're living in a world where this guy is going to break out like that. You need someone like Daredevil to step in after the fact. You took him down legally, and he's definitely screwed legally, especially after trying to break out. But after that point, you know, when that stuff happens, that's where you need the Daredevil. That's where you need like the Batman. That's where you need these heroes to come in and kind of step in and, you know, stop what was happening. Like, you know, when Officer Brett showed up and like, you know, Matt told him, or as Daredevil told him, like, you know, I apprehended this guy who was, you know, trying to break out of prison. You know, that's the thing that he had to do. So I feel like, you know, it's important to have that element, not just do it, you know, the non-sexy way. I think you kind of almost have to do it both. I think they had to have their cake and eat it too in this circumstance.
Got it. All right. Well, we can, you know, we can move on from here. I don't think that either of us will completely agree on what we got here, which is totally fine. I often disagree with you, Kevin, just not.
No, agree with everything I say.
Agree with me all the time. No, you listen, you very well may be right. I very well may be wrong. I am happy to confess that. If you know, if you guys are totally out on what I just said, that's totally fine. If you're out on what Kevin said, that's fine too. Again, we really would just like to hear from you guys in terms of what you thought about this final encounter, because my thought is that it will be divisive, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just like the idiot who's asking for too much, which would not be the first time. So I'm totally equipped for that to be the case. But let's go to poor Vanessa, who is she's going to wear the engagement ring, but she's going to have to fly off on that chopper without Fisk.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, which is funny, because when Fisk proposed, she technically never gave an answer. So I guess this was almost her giving the answer of saying yes by putting on that ring. And again, I don't think this is the end of Vanessa. Knowing that we have a season two coming, I feel like we're definitely going to be seeing her again.
Yeah, I would expect so. And then the next day, the newspaper calls him Daredevil. He is officially Daredevil. And there's like some comic book art in there.
Yeah, that is, I believe, straight out of the comic. I believe that. I don't want to be wrong here, but I think that may be Alex Maleev, yeah. But I could be incorrect.
Yeah, but it's cool. It's cool to see that in the paperweight. That's a great little nod.
Well, yeah, because you got to have an artist representation in this case. You can't have, there's no photography going on there. Peter Parker could show up and take a picture of him,
yeah.
But did not happen here in this case.
Yeah. So we've got that, and everyone's making fun of the name, but they all agree better than the Devil of Hell's Kitchen. Karen is a fan of the costume, unlike you and I.
Well, Karen, again, they're looking at the actual comic book costume because they don't have an actual photograph of what the regular costume looks like. And I like the comic costume, so.
Yeah, comic costume looks great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Foggy thinks the horns are a bit much.
Yes, he does. I also love that because Foggy clearly knows he's talking to Matt.
Yeah.
And in a way, Foggy could give advice now to Matt to be like, here's how you fix this costume.
I know. Well, maybe he will. He's got good fashion sense.
Yeah. Maybe he'll be like, make it yellow. Yeah. And Matt will be like, dude, no.
No way. But yeah, possibly. So, you know, everybody, the band is back together. Nelson and Murdoch, Avocado's at law. It's a long story. The plaque is back. Now they just need some clients. But first, Foggy has to go help Marcy get a new job. Maybe they're back together. What do you think? Are you happy with that as the outcome for Foggy, that him and Marcy are going to try and make this work?
I mean, yeah, I want to see Foggy happy. So him trying to work it with Marcy, I think, works great, because this end definitely sets up Matt and Karen becoming a lot closer in what is, I assume, to be the year difference between this season and next.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, the final time we see Karen is with Matt as they walk into Nelson and Murdoch, and you get the sense that they are, they haven't sealed the deal there, but they're on their way. And I'm glad that we haven't, you know, gone all the way there yet. Like, I think it's good that we're holding off on that. And wouldn't surprise me if, you know, season two, one of the first shots is like Matt and Karen waking up in the same bed together or something like that.
Yeah, just kind of establishing that, yeah, in that time period. And it would feel fine to me, because I think they've done enough work here that if they do a flash forward to a year later or something, that it would feel like, yeah, it would make sense that they got together.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing to me that the death of Wesley ended up being such a little deal this season. I mean, obviously traumatic for Karen, but no repercussions of that. And even here, you know, when Matt is saying to her, like, there's been something in your voice for a while now. I thought whatever it was would get better once we put Fisk away, but it hasn't. And she doesn't, you know, allude to Wesley at all in her response. You know, she says, we put him away, but it won't bring back Elena or Ben or erase what we've been through or what we had to do to get here, which I guess, you know, that's an allusion to what she's done. But the Wesley thing is still just hanging out there.
Yeah, I don't think this is something that's going to go away. I mean, I feel like a year later, you know, whenever the next season starts off, I think we're going to see some repercussions still from it. I think we might still see her hurting from it. I don't think she, you know, her not admitting to it right away, her not bringing it up, I think is smart, because it's a plot thread, a character thread that can be used later on, that can be built up in the next season for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll see where that goes. We'll see where Matt and Karen go together. We'll see where Fisk goes. We see him finally in his final scene. He sits down. He is in all the whites. He is sitting in front of a wall that reminds certainly me, I assume you and everybody listening, of the rabbit in the snowstorm. So he's got a lot of thinking about the kind of man he wants to be to do ahead of him. And then the very final shot is just classic Daredevil jumping off into the night. And there you have it. Season one.
Yep. Season one's over.
Season one in the books.
I do really like the scene of him in that room. I like the idea of him having to stay there and think about what man he wants to be. And I really like the fact that he's an all white, because the classic Kingpin wears a white blazer at all times almost. So I kind of like the little pieces of that ending for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, season one as a whole, I like we both said, two thumbs up. I mean, this is good news for Marvel, I think. This sets up a really great tone and universe for them to play within the world of Netflix.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. And, you know, we said that this was going to be the final podcast that we did, but with the news of season two breaking right here as we've been recording this final podcast about the finale, I think we could do one more. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for doing it. Yeah. I'm all for coming back next year when it premieres and doing some more.
Of course, absolutely. But before we even think about any of that, let's just make it official. Let's do a feedback show. We will do one more podcast here about Daredevil. We're going to take a few days off, if you don't mind. This will probably be happening either over the weekend or next week would be my guess. But you guys, let us know what you want to hear, what you want to talk about on the next and. This will be the last Daredevil podcast of the season. Get questions our way through our feedback form, postshowrecaps.com/feedback. Send a tweet to Kevin and I at Kev Mahadeo is Kevin. I'm at Round Howard. Do you have a hashtag for this one, Kevin, for the Daredevil finale podcast? Something that we can track as people try to reach us?
Oh man, avocados at law? We did that one though, huh?
we did that. We could do that again. We could do whatever you want, Kevin.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of a really good one. It's hard to follow up Gal Fury too.
Yeah, that's difficult. Well, we've been, let's see, we could just bring back hashtag Two Dares, Two Devils, because Two Dares, Two Devils is now a thing that's happening. So just
Two Dares, Two Devil, a reality.
Okay, just whatever you want to do. Just send us your questions. You could do that through Twitter or through our feedback form, or you can leave them in the comments here on postshowrecaps.com. We will be back with a feedback show, and you know, we'll also, I think that'll be a good opportunity, Kevin, for you and I to just give like broad strokes look here at what season one was all about, what it got right, what very little I think it got wrong, and we can forecast season two a little bit as well, kind of talk about what we expect to see in season two. So we will do that. We will have that for you again over the weekend or next week. Other than that, Kevin, I guess I'll talk to you then.
Talk to you then, buddy.
All right. Thanks everybody for hanging on with our daily Daredevil podcast. This has been a lot of fun, and we will talk to you all again soon. Take care.